Well, good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and welcome to our panel discussion for this Wednesday morning. It is the 19th of July, and I feel silly saying this, but summer is flying by. What happened? I don't know. Something between the 18th and the 19th that I've just realized that that and seeing last night that all of the back to school stuff is in. And
oh, I know.
Well,
sumeresi kuminin dudi sin kuku.
Anything? Do you know what that was?
I think he said, "I'm having a great summer. I can't wait to get to Fire Island."
Sumeresi. I was in the Hunter College chorus, and they sang that.
Yeah,
sumeresi kuminin.
It sounds Latin. It sounds like something I would have learned.
That's Latin.
No.
What is it?
I don't know. It's something.
Okay. All right.
You don't even know what you said.
I know what I said.
When can I go to Fire Island?
No, I know what I said. Summer is a coming in. Lordi sing kuku, but you put in the old whatever. Sumeresi kuminin. Lordi sing kuku.
Oh, Rosemary, haven't you missed this?
Oh my God, Fire Island in the first 4 minutes. Yeah,
I did that for you, Rosemary.
Thank you. I feel right at home.
Exactly. It's a welcome Rosemary line.
Good stuff. Well, let me introduce everybody. As you can tell on our telephone line from Amman, Jordan, is Rosemary Armeo. She is the director of the journalism program at the University at Albany, at least until the end of the summer. And right now she is working in a journalism program in Amman, Jordan. And we're thrilled that she is able to talk to us on the telephone from her post overseas. Good morning.
Yep, I am happy to. I just scooted out a bunch of people from an office, and they brought me tea and my computer. I just love it here.
What time is it there?
Yep. It's 4:15, so it's towards the end of the working day.
Well, this is a good way to end the day, then. That's good.
It is, yeah.
And our day is just beginning. Here we go. So you let us know how it's going to end up.
And in Amman, can they use the app? Can they download the app and use it to hear the station?
They can, and they do, as a matter of fact. Yes.
Fantastic.
Well, because I saw on Rosemary's Facebook, she said, "I was especially interested in the belly fat conversation the other day, so I knew that you were listening."
Yes, I did listen, and I saw some letters. You took a little bit of abuse for that, but I personally am very interested in belly fat. Right after that, I went down to get a new device for my computer, and there was a man there who had this shirt on. And it was, I am not fat shaming because I was in awe of it. It was such a belly. Oh, my God. It was like Santa Claus, you know, that shaking like a jelly thing. It was really something, especially so here in Amman where most people are very slender.
Now,
they don't
Rosemary.
Have bodies overseas like America. Sorry, that's all. I'll stop.
Communications consultant Teresa Bourgeois is with us. She has a question for you. Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning. No, I was just going to say, I was thinking that you could have put a stop to that conversation. It had never occurred to me that you would continue.
Fan the flames.
Oh, no, we'd still be talking about it, Teresa. Oh, we are.
And Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. You're the one who started that whole thing.
I know. And I heard from a Harvard doctor.
Yeah, I got a letter from right here, actually.
A Harvard doctor who said, you know, you're not a real doctor. I'm a real doctor was basically his thing of saying. See, you know what I mean?
All right, let's get to the issues at hand, and I think I'm going to start off with how there's a lot in the news, right? There's a lot to talk about, but let's start with the health bill and the collapse. Dead on arrival is the repeal and replace process. So you'll remember, two nights ago, the Senate Republicans who were putting off a vote because they were waiting for John McCain, who had surgery, to come back so they could hopefully get the votes that they needed. And then there were more defectors, and they said, okay. Then the president put on the pressure yesterday. That's where we left off in our conversation. The president put on the pressure, and Mitch McConnell went before his constituencies and said, look, we're going to repeal Obamacare. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to repeal Obamacare. And then there were a lot more defections, and that whole thing just collapsed, all but collapsed yesterday in that effort.
And Joe, there was another plan also, if I'm not incorrect, which is to bring over the House passed bill in its entirety and try to pass it. And try to pass it in the Senate, and that, of course, would be doomed also.
That was also doomed, although I believe, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, because I was offline for a portion of this morning, but I believe as of last night, there was still a possibility that even though he knew he wouldn't have the votes, that Mitch McConnell would still try to bring this to a vote.
Well, apparently he's going to do that. Apparently he's going to do that, and the thinking there is that he has to protect his conservative people who want to say that they voted for such a concept, as opposed to his moderates who are safe. I mean, you know, what they've done is going to get them a lot of favorable publicity, but he thinks he needs to protect the conservative element who want to show that they cast such a vote.
Yeah, they're gonna. He claims he's gonna force a vote on the Senate floor on a repeal without replace. You know, of the ACA, and the idea is that within 2 years they would have a replacement. Now,
is he still gonna wait for McCain, or we don't know?
He said he's gonna do it next week.
Yeah.
So whether
I don't think he's gonna win, even if he does do it.
No, he knows he's gonna win, but he wants to have a recorded vote, which is forcing his members to vote on something that has 17% approval. It's just like Paul Ryan forcing his members. You know, John Faso and Lisa Stefanik and all those other Republicans are now on record voting to decimate the health care system in this country. And so now the Republicans will be, you know, one way or the other on it. We'll see. They're all been invited to the White House today.
That's got to be a little uncomfortable for people.
The great negotiator waits until, you know, the bill is collapsed.
Rosemary, I want you to jump in on this, but my understanding is this true, that if we have a repeal, if there is a repeal, that 62 million people would be without health care. Is that a correct number?
I have read that, and of course, you know, the numbers are all over the place, but clearly the politics are not all over the place. This is a terrible process that we have gone through. And either way, whether it's repealed and there's nothing to replace it, that's bad, or if it doesn't repeal and Obamacare continues under an onslaught, which you know is going to happen with Trump and Price overseeing it, either way, the people suffering on this are American citizens.
Yeah.
All of us, even those of us who don't need Obamacare, because rates are going to go crazy, I think, because there'll be such uncertainty. And I don't understand their thinking. They cannot think that this is good. Obama and Democrats are not going to be blamed for this. Trump now owns health care.
But he says he doesn't. Right. He says he doesn't own it.
He says he doesn't.
Well, you know what really burns my behind? A candle about yay high. No, really, what really burns me up, you know, is the idea that he thinks that the Democrats are going to get blamed for this, as you just said,
for being obstructionist.
Right.
It's unbelievable.
But if he says it over 18, and over, you know.
18% of the people like this bill. 18%.
Well, that's what's interesting. But again, remember, they need it because they want to do the tax bill. But I just see in the last 45 minutes, Donald Trump has tweeted twice on health care. He says, I'll be having lunch at the White House today with Republican senators concerning health care. They must keep their promise to America. The Republicans never discuss how good their health care bill is, and it will get even better at lunchtime. The Dems scream death as OCARE dies.
What does that mean?
He's threatening them.
The Republicans never discuss how good their health care bill is.
Oh, my God.
It's so out of touch with the real world.
And apparently, he's really ticked off with Rand Paul, because Rand Paul had the audacity to go on to the Sunday shows and rip the bill.
Right. And,
you know, it's easy to criticize the Republicans right now, and they're paying a price. But Democrats also deserve some kick right here now. Where's the bill that says, here's how we want to fix Obamacare? For the same reason that Republicans just want to be on record, why don't Democrats want to be on record showing that Obamacare is fixable, it's improvable, and we could work together?
Well,
why isn't it out there?
They had a press conference yesterday laying out what they have been proposing to do and asking the Republicans to do. They reiterated it yesterday at a press conference with Schumer and a couple
of other senators. What do they want to do?
They said that you, and they named specific bills that they've introduced that you have to deal with. And again, I haven't studied these details, but deal with the reinsurance rates, deal with the subsidy structure, get more, expand the Medicare expansion. It was with 31 states. They say that it will go do much better if it, hold on one second, I wrote this down. But
see,
they had four or five proposals where they had specific bills that have been introduced, Senator Klobuchar and others. And they discussed.
Have been introduced. It's all about marketing. Trump has that right, and Democrats still are not learning. Schumer ought to be out there right now saying, here's our bill. It has a cute name to it, you know, like health care for all or something, and fix it, and it would be there. And not five bills that we did in the past that Republicans, they're still sniping. They have to get out ahead, and I just don't see it happening.
I think you make a point.
Right. So the four areas they talked about is to deal with the premium increases and make the payments permanent so that you don't have this instability in the insurance market. Do a reinsurance exchange. I need to learn details of that. Address the issue of rural coverage. Address the pharma issues, big pharma issues about the costs of pharmaceuticals, and address issues on Medicare Part D. And they named specific legislation. And in each case, they had they noted that there is at least one Republican sponsor of these bills that have been introduced.
Yeah, I mean, I think Democrats have a real opportunity here if they can refute the terrible untruths about Obamacare that our vice president and our secretary of health have been more than spreading in the past few days. This Obamacare is actually a mix of conservative and liberal ideas in the past. You know, we keep hearing about how it was Mitt Romney. That's true. Why isn't that a good thing? We have a blueprint. It has worked, despite what Pence is saying. That could be shown, and it could be improved. And plus, there's nothing better. The Republicans have just spent 6 months showing us there's nothing better. There's just such an opportunity. Where is Nancy Pelosi and Tom Perez right now? This is a not just a health care issue. That's very important. But it's also an election issue in 2018.
I also think it was important for the Democrats to step back and let the Republicans go through this process because they've exposed the lie that they've been telling for 7 years.
Nice.
And
true.
I really think that they needed to give the Republicans room to do what has just happened over the last 6 months, which I think they had not been doing effectively prior to this, which is the Republicans have gotten away for years with saying repeal, replace, repeal, replace. We have something better that's cheaper, that gets government out of your health care, blah, blah, blah. It's excellent. And they never did. And this is, I know Rich Honan and I got into this back and forth even before the election, you know, that they don't really have a replacement. If it was that easy, it would have been done before. It's very complicated. It's very hard to do. But since the day the bill passed 7 or 8 years ago now, the Democrats have been saying we need to make improvements on it. Now, the one thing that they also called for yesterday that Senator Collins and others have called for is go back to what's called regular order in the Senate, which means begin to have, have these bills go through
hearings,
the committee system.
Like actually let people talk about issues.
And McCain said the same thing. And Rosemary, I have to say, I understand where you're both coming from. It's great to have Teresa in the weeds, the policy weeds, telling us about this stuff. But you are absolutely right.
On messaging.
It's just a matter of how you message it. Now, they'll never get the bill to the floor, that's for sure. The Democrats won't, I don't think. Well,
that's not the audience for this. It's for people out there who need to know actually Democrats can govern, unlike Republicans apparently, and listening to people and trying to help them rather than just stand up for an ideology is something that Democrats should say, hey, we do that.
Well, I think that their job right now, and they've been doing it effectively for the last couple of months, their biggest task now is to stop bad things from happening. And I think, and in fact, that we should step back and say, democracy has really worked here. You know, it's really worked where it was great consternation. Would Trump and his folks be able to come in and dismantle the system? Now, they still might, but the American people said, this is not what we want. And they spoke up, they wrote, they called, and it really did make a difference.
It seems like there's a fine line, though, between democracy working and complete ineptitude.
Yeah, and by the way, I'm thinking about something I just said, that it won't come up for a vote. You've all heard, of course, about a discharge petition, right? In the House of Representatives, meaning if you get 218 people to sign a discharge petition, although they never know, they never tell you who's on the petition until you have the 218. It's a neat thing. But in any case, if the Democrats, if some of the Susan Collins and others join with the Democrats, maybe they could put a bill out there.
Well, one of the things I think back is when President Clinton tried to move a big health care bill and didn't succeed, and that's the part that I was participating in. Even though the big bill didn't succeed, what they did right after that is break it out into separate bills, and that's when you got what's now called the CHIP program, Child Health Plus, that made a tremendous difference. And there were a number of other smaller bills that in the wake of the loss of the overall package, they did work out bipartisan support on four or five things that did make a difference. And so it's possible that that could happen because then the Republicans would say, well, we got something done. But Trump might get in the way of that. And the other problem, of course, is that Trump and Tom Price at HHS, and I assume Steve Bannon's orchestrating this from his office in the White House, they truly are actively dismantling our health care system right now, and that's despicable. It's dangerous and despicable.
I'm going to hold you there. We are going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. Alan has some letters. We'll continue talking about health care, and then we'll move on to Russia, which we have to talk about. We'll talk about that and more after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok is here, Teresa Bourgeois, and from Amman, Jordan, via telephone, Rosemary Armeo is on the phone, and we couldn't be more delighted. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We've got a few on healthcare, Alan. We'll go to those, and then we'll move on.
Okay, but first I want Teresa to read a letter that she just read us, that somebody wrote, and Rosemary wrote back already.
I don't have it in front of me right now.
Okay, but basically, this is it. Somebody said, Teresa and Rosemary, my cuppeth runneth over. And Rosemary wrote back and said, we are fun, aren't we? Isn't that great?
You are awesome, Rosemary. You are so
you
funny.
You too. Mutual admiration here. And there's so much to talk about. Oh,
there is.
There is. Okay, so for example, one of the things we want to talk about is from Teresa, another Teresa, who says, this is an English tune from the Middle Ages, Sumerizikuminin, Ludi Sing Cuckoo. The rest of the lyrics are quite bawdy, says Teresa. All right.
What a great word, bawdy.
I want to hear the bawdy part.
Yes, right. Okay. Okay, then Barbara says, please explain to me, because I don't understand, why are only Republican senators invited to this meeting with Trump at the White House?
It's a very good question.
Well, I said, because there's no hope. Why feed them? They're not going to vote for this lousy bill. They never have been. They're not going to. They've stuck together. That would be a waste of a good sandwich.
That is the best thing you've ever said. Why feed them?
Yeah.
It's terrific.
Well, they won't get as much cake as he will.
Chocolate cake.
You know, I don't think we should really be fat shaming him or anything like that. I think that would be wrong. And we shouldn't say
anything. I wasn't fat shaming.
And we shouldn't say anything about that. We shouldn't say anything about that swivel in his haircut. That goes
He made a big deal about having two pieces of cake while his guest had one piece of cake.
Right. And this morning they had
and
Chris
the fact that he could have that.
Sure. And this morning they had Chris Christie on the air.
I would have liked to have seen that.
Oh, defending Trump, he said he's our guy. He's our guy. And everything he's doing and the health care and all the rest of it.
He was defending.
Yeah.
This, what Trump is doing on health care is totally indefensible. This notion that he says that the president of the United States wants to take action that will actively hurt millions and millions of Americans, our most vulnerable seniors in nursing home, kids in schools, people with disabilities, and that he almost gleefully, it's like sport to him. But if you sat down and asked him, what are the details? Do you know what you're doing? I bet he couldn't answer a second or a third level question on health care. Yet it's just words that he's using. But
and you know what, Teresa, even if he is as shallow as we know that he is, he could be a hero. Even I would say nice things about him. If he did what only he is capable of, unbeholden to either party, he actually could say, you know what, let's do single payer or a system like single payer. Right. That would really help everybody. He could do it.
Yep.
So it isn't just that he's incompetent and doesn't know about health care. He just knowingly wants to hurt people.
You know, I'm glad you brought
that
up.
Really awful.
I'm glad you brought that up, Rosemary, because yesterday I said, with all the awful things, as Teresa has just laid out, that this guy wanted to do to health care, I think he's gotten such a reaction to it that he may, in fact, have done the one thing he didn't want to do, which is to set up the table, the pool table, for the passage of, when the Democrats finally get in, of a universal health care program.
Yeah. On the other hand, I do like Teresa said earlier about letting the Republicans play this out. Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan have both been hurt by this debacle, and that is a good thing in my view.
Well, I think
they've been exposed a bit.
Yeah, you needed to expose the rhetoric for being,
right.
It's cotton candy. It looks good, but there's no there. And in this process, I think that Schumer and Pelosi were right in stepping back and letting them go through this process. And then you also, it makes it clear where people like Elise Stefanik and John Faso and Congressman Collins and a lot of other Republican members of Congress are on the health care issue.
We've heard from our friend James, who says, Rosemary is right. The Dems should be touting a plan that works as an alternative to what the Republicans want to do. I think the problem is that there is no workable alternative short of single payer, and they are scared as heck to propose that to an American electorate that may not be ready for it, but soon they will. I do not see the day. That the Republicans put up, a universal health care plan and becomes an entitlement. And we see even with a much maligned and unhappy entitlement like the Affordable Care Act, right? Even there, you can't take it away once you got it.
Right. And I think that there may not ever be a time where they put a bill on the floor that's a single-payer bill, but instead what happens is you have a range of incremental changes that expands Medicare, expands Medicaid, maybe opens up the federal system to, in the military system
that's
to more
good.
And more people.
That'd work.
And so incrementally you get to essentially that, which is what people have been saying. You did it. Mm-hmm. You expanded that with Child Health Plus. You expanded that with the Medicare expansion in 31 states and so on and so forth. But the problem
Medicaid, you mean?
I'm sorry. Did it again. Medicaid. Thank you. Oh, I did that the other day, too, and I apologize. I meant to say Medicaid. I know the difference between the two. I just made a mistake. But the problem now is that you have a president who's destabilizing the health insurance markets. And, this is
right.
These are not like a jet ski that you can turn quickly. This is like a big, a huge ship that takes a long time to turn.
Well, I like your idea of incrementalism because I've been preaching for quite a while now the idea that you take Medicare, which is a good program that seniors love, mm-hmm. And you say, okay, every year we'll put another 2 years below it until you have universal health care.
Right. And that, I think, was what's going to happen. And then you do have to keep focus. You have to deal with the problems within the system, with people, and it's often providers cheating the system. And you really have to deal with this pharmaceutical question, big pharma, and the price of drugs. And that's one thing where the Democrats and the Republicans really, it's going to be tough to do, but you need to deal with pharmaceutical issues.
Let's finish up the letters, and then we'll move on to some other subjects after a break.
And Naomi says, right on, Rosemary. Schumer and Pelosi need to get out in front of the health care issue with a precise plan to make the Affordable Care Act work and stay away from the Heritage Foundation plan panel.
Yes.
All right. Yes. And did you want to say something, Rosemary?
No, I'm just saying I'm agreeing. Okay. Definitely.
Okay. And Brian says, there is an effort underway to remove Pelosi. Panel. Do you think there will be such a move to remove the Republican Senate leader? That's an interesting question. I mean, he's getting a little older now. I should talk. And he's getting a little older now. And second of all, failure is generally not rewarded, although in the case of Nancy Pelosi, there's an effort, but they're not going to get rid of her. I'll tell you that right now. There's always somebody with ambition. That's the definition of politician is ambition.
I don't see it, Alan. Yeah. Don't see it at all. Yeah. Don't forget, he got Gorsuch on the Supreme Court. That's a huge success.
Right.
And this is a minor setback. Actually, I think John McCain should be removed. I don't think he's competent to be in office anymore.
Well, he gets a lot of credit for what he did this time. He put out a statement, which I thought was quite nice, yesterday about going back to the regular Senate rules of order and all the rest of it. Yeah.
Right.
Was good. He was very tardy in saying, oh, I'm not going to vote for this lousy bill either. He waited until there already were defections enough that his vote didn't matter.
Right, you are.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll move on to Russia. We'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. A little Jelly Roll Morton to get us into the break. Very nice, Liz. Thank you very much. We welcome you, Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Teresa Bourgeois with us this morning. So let us move on to this topic. Alan has some more letters. We'll get to those in just a few minutes. But I want to bring up this topic, which, of course, is a major one. Trump and Putin held a second undisclosed private conversation during the G20. Hours into a dinner with world leaders who had gathered for the Group of 20 summit meeting, President Trump left his chair at the sprawling banquet table and headed to where President Putin of Russia was seated. The two presidents had met earlier in the day for the first time and, as the White House put it, had developed a rapport even as they talked about Russia's interference in the U.S. 2016 elections. The July 7th meeting in Hamburg, Germany, was the single most scrutinized of the Trump presidency. But it turned out there was another encounter, a one-on-one discussion over dinner that lasted as long as an hour and relied solely, so three people, as we know of right now,
solely
on Trump, Putin, and a Kremlin-provided interpreter.
Yeah.
All right. No presidential relationship has been more dissected than the one between Trump and Putin. And this is the line I want to read. The dinner discussion caught the attention of other leaders around the table, some of whom later remarked privately on the odd spectacle of an American president seeming to single out the Russian leader for special attention at a summit meeting that included some of the U.S.'s staunchest, oldest allies.
That was then, this is now.
All right.
They were. Okay. So what do you think, Teresa?
Well, I want to. Do you mind if I go to Rosemary first?
I want to hear what Rosemary thinks and how it looks from where she sits.
Oh, okay. Here's how it looks. Putin speaks English. Trump does not speak Russian. So he goes into a meeting with this powerful Russian playing at high stakes, and we all know his background. And there are two. It's two against one. That alone makes me worried about this. If you've ever worked, if you've ever done an interview with someone in a foreign language, you and your interpreter talk to each other. So Putin might have been saying things like, be forceful when you say this. You know, he's full of poop. Watch it, you know. All those things go on, and it would have been lost to Trump totally. The fact that he went to Putin, it's just like he stuck his hand out first. He loses as soon as he does that. There is all kinds of ritualistic and just rules of procedure that he's violating, even without knowing the context of what the discussion was about.
Right. And I think, you know, some describe this as a secret meeting. I don't think it was secret. It was, you know, not disclosed. But obviously, you don't have a secret meeting in front of all of those other folks. But so I think, it was described in an unfortunate way. But I think, for instance, today in Washington, people are focused on the meeting with the senators going to the White House on health care. But I'm more focused on the meeting where the members of the Senate, Republican and Democrat, are meeting with top officials, Secretary of Defense, Secretary of State, and other key officials on ISIS and what's going on in Raqqa and in Mosul and such, and what's next in those regions. And that raises the issue about can some people say, well, this is a good thing because you have these conflicts in Syria, you have the Russians and the U.S. there. You know, in some places we're on the same side, in some places we're on opposite side. You need to deconflict and so on and so forth. And isn't it good that they're talking, you know, because that'll prevent mistakes. But what is there really a thawing, or is this all about, I mean, the problem is this all about his personal relationships and his financial dealings, or is this really about U.S.-Russia policy? And how do people from where you sit, Rosemary, how are people looking at, or are they looking at this relationship changing at all, the U.S.-Russia relationship?
Well, they're looking at it in the context of Syria, right, because that's right, of course, on their border, and there is a belief that the U.S. influence and power is shrinking. That's notable. But as I've said before, they're very polite here. I don't run into a lot of criticism. Right now, there are protests against America. I don't know if you know about this. There were last November, a Jordanian soldier shot at three Americans. They were here training on a base in Jordan, training Syrian rebels, and they came into the base. And the soldier, the Jordanian soldier, maintains that they didn't follow the proper, you know, passwords or whatever to get in, and so he shot and killed three Americans. At first, the government here defended him. Then apparently some pressure was put on. They court-martialed him, and he was sentenced to life in prison. So his tribe is out protesting on the street in Amman from the airport and in his southern Jordan hometown against Americans. That's gotten more coverage and news than anything about Russia and the United States. And there's also a plethora of Middle Eastern news, which is in American newspapers, but we don't give it as much attention. One is about Qatar and the feud that's going on, and did the UAE actually precipitate it all? The turnover of power in Saudi Arabia, which reads like a novel, that's attracting attention here. But I wouldn't say they're saying, oh, look at what Putin did to Trump, not in Jordan.
Right. I think this Qatar issue is really fascinating. I saw yesterday that the Turkish government sent troops in the last few days, which is fascinating. And also, the U.S. is increasing its activity in Syria, you know, in the Middle East. And where do we need to do that from? You know, the key base to do that from is Qatar. And this, there's this disarray now.
So where did the Turks send?
I'm sorry. One other big issue, and it's huge, is Iran. Trump was forced to say, yeah, you know, Iran is living up to this deal. And yet at the same time, he's saying the nuclear deal I'm talking about.
Right.
And at the same time, he said, but we're still going to impose new sanctions because of, and then he made some other excuses for it that have nothing to do with nuclear issues. Iran is furious about that and, in fact, may have even a legal case that the U.S. is breaking the deal under false pretexts. That's a pretty interesting issue, and that's getting a lot of attention.
That Iran deal, the fact that he, after all of the bludgeoning that he gave Hillary Clinton on that and everybody else, and I mean, he did the right thing, but it was done so quietly and completely opposite of what he said that he was going to do.
Well, he had to. I mean, basically, Iran is sticking to the deal. It's just like Obamacare. He vilified it, but it works.
But he's a liar.
And that's what's happening with the deal.
But Rosemary, he's a liar. So,
yeah, I know.
You know, he doesn't have to stay with anything he says, because we all know he just reverses himself. But what I found interesting and what you're saying and Teresa is saying is that somehow somebody got to him to acknowledge that they were keeping their deal on the nukes.
Madison Tillerson sat him down and said, you have to. Apparently there was a meeting with six or seven key high-level defense and State Department folks. And throughout the whole meeting, you know, he didn't want to do it, but they convinced him that he had to do it. He had to do it.
The American press has done, I think, the big papers, you know, the ones that Trump people don't read, did a really good job on this. It's a sneaky thing that America is doing, trying to get around its deal. That's bad. But even worse is that for 30 years we have had a terrible relationship with Iran, and now this deal over nuclear power seemed to say, okay, we're going to try something different. We're going to try actually talking to each other. And Trump has reneged on that. And we're going right back to this, like, little tit-for-tat sparring. Iran boasted today that they have a PhD researcher from Rutgers, and they're holding him. Is it Rutgers
Princeton? I don't remember.
But, you know, a researcher, he's holding him as a prisoner. That's because of Donald Trump, not because Iran has suddenly turned rogue.
I just want to get back to this meeting, though, just for a second, which is I find interesting because last night the president tweeted that the fake news is becoming more and more dishonest. Even a dinner arranged for top 20 leaders in Germany is made to look sinister. Well, it wasn't the dinner. Everybody knew about the dinner. The reporters knew about the dinner. What they didn't know, because it wasn't disclosed, and as you said, Teresa, maybe secret isn't the word, but they left the room. They got up from the table and they went into a meeting that was not recorded by anyone other than the Russians. Yeah. So the question...
Did they leave the room or just go to the side? Did he go and left his place?
I thought they went to a different place.
Then I misunderstood.
No, I don't know the answer to that question. But either way...
He broke protocol at dinner and moved from where he was supposed to be sitting.
And he did it in front of the G20 people.
Right.
And basically thumbing his nose at them and saying, this is where my priority is.
But that's my question. Yeah. So you've got all of this stuff going on at home where everybody, Russia, and you're saying it's dishonest, it's fake news, blah, blah, blah. And then, so what more you're left to speculate. What do they talk about?
Because, Joe, from the very beginning, I have said it's all about Russia. Teresa just touched on it.
Yeah.
It is that he's got all these entangling financial and other relationships, and the Russians have got him. That's what this is about.
Well, what occurred to me is a different president could have gone and done that, and people might have thought it was a good thing. But because Donald Trump has not disclosed his tax returns, because we don't know what his financial interconnections may or may not be, and because, you know, there's so much uncertainty around why, in the face of Russia clearly interfering with our elections, he's not doing anything about that. Speaking of meeting today, we got to get to that one. But about the election commission, but I think that people then, it raises the question of what were they talking about, and is it in the best interest of the U.S. And also, these meetings have a protocol about them. And, it appears he broke protocol, and you have to wonder, you know, and why didn't he have somebody with him who was listening and being a part of that and could do a readout on that conversation?
Because the why is, as far as I'm concerned, he had business to discuss with Putin. He's scared to death that the Russians have got him and they could release information. That's my bet.
Yeah, or he's just so experienced he doesn't realize the implications of going and sitting and chatting with Putin at a dinner.
Yeah.
It could be that simple, that he is so inexperienced that he doesn't understand the implications. You know, words have meaning, actions have meaning. He doesn't understand the implications of what he's doing. But in this gets
I don't
back
believe
to
it.
Who knows? But this gets back to my question that Rosemary touched on, which is that there's a real realignment going on, and it's the U.S. is being weakened. You saw it at the G20, and I think you
see
it
now. For what reason? For what reason? Why is this relationship with the Russians from the time of the campaign, I love Putin and all the rest of that stuff, going on? I say it's all been all about the Russians, and his business is there from the very beginning.
I just want to read a paragraph from the Times report. The evening after his two meetings with Mr. Putin, the first lasting 135 minutes and the second an hour, Mr. Trump returned to Washington on the Air Force One flight back. Right. His top advisors helped draft a statement about a meeting with his son, Donald Trump Jr., attended last year with a Kremlin-connected lawyer who promised damaging information about Hillary Clinton. So does all this merge?
Yes.
Certainly seems that way.
Eight people in that meeting that they didn't think that they needed to disclose. Eight people. They weren't talking about adoption.
And high-powered people, Teresa. Yes. Imagine putting all that together, and then he just kind of forgot about it and didn't mention it until, like, the New York Times wrote the story.
Right.
Amazing.
Right. And who were the big power brokers in that meeting? A real estate broker and his firm, a billionaire real estate guy, and all of his subordinates, two of his subordinates there. Does that stink?
With financial ties and interconnections back to the Trump team and Kushner.
And really sketchy ties, not the ties to Trump.
The ties are clear, but they're...
But the eighth individual who was identified, some really sketchy...
Lots of legal issues about money laundering and other things.
So is there one more shadow that has to be filled in?
No, I think we got everybody. Well, according to, in the asking of the lawyer of the eighth individual, they said, for God's sakes, is this everybody? And they said yes. And then even Mueller's office said that they that this is
yep,
it.
You got
so
them all.
You got them all.
Well, you know, the Trump pansies are still saying, you know, there's no proof that the president knew about this or colluded. And I keep looking up in the dictionary what collusion means. There's his closest relatives. There was a willingness expressed by this cop campaign ads, aides. It seems like there was opportunity. What do you have to prove to show collusion? I guess Joe Mueller has to worry about that. But
if you
it
read,
is interesting.
If you look at Breitbart,
Robert Mueller. Yeah, go ahead.
If you look at Breitbart, which I did again yesterday,
dangerous.
And if you look at Breitbart, you look at Fox and how they're covering it, and if those folks are just watching that news, then there's an understanding of why they view it completely differently than you and I do, because we look at different news.
Let's take a break. We will go to news, and when we come back, we will continue our conversation with Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Teresa Bourgeois. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Wednesday morning, the 19th of July, 5 minutes past 10 o'clock. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo joining us from Amman, Jordan via telephone, and Teresa Bourgeois joining us at the end of the table. Good morning. It's very nice to have
We're
you here.
We're so excited to have Rosemary here.
Let's do some letters.
So excited you're at the end of the table, Teresa.
Let's do some letters, and then we are going to move on, and we'll talk about elections and other stuff.
Yeah, voters.
Yeah, here we go. James says, Trump and Putin did not meet in a separate room. Trump simply changed chairs at a large table and sat next to Putin. It was in front of everyone. Yeah, but we don't know what they said. It could have been in another room. It could have been there, but they were talking about something. All right.
Yeah, they sat next. Putin was sitting next to Melania.
Yeah.
She pretty much understands English, so she probably knows.
Yeah. Okay. Trump's second meeting with Putin, says James, probably was just getting clarification of his orders from his Russian handler, Putin traitor, useful idiot, to use a Russian term. Trump may be and probably is both from Jim. Panel says, I think too much is being made of the meeting. The only problem is that the White House late disclosure. Don't forget, Trump is narcissistic and gravitates toward people that show adulation when he perceives as such. An hour with China's president would not have been comfortable. Also, what's in it for me? Putin is playing him. Thanks. And that's from Lou. There hasn't been a day, says Barbara, that I haven't missed hearing Rosemary's participation and viewpoints on various topics being discussed. What a joy to hear her back on the panel today, even from far away. Rosemary, please come back to us soon. And that's from Barbara. Okay. You have any remorse yet, Rosemary?
No.
Okay, here we go. And then we heard from Julius. Overturning Citizens United would make many things possible. Regards. And that's from Jules. And Susan says, so good to hear from Rosemary again. I think the Democrats should have a plan to improve ACA, give it to McConnell and the Senate, but at the same time, take it public. Make it public is what they want to do to improve. Push the message. Don't sit back and let McConnell set the dialogue. Direct the message themselves. Okay. Hello, panel, says Apple.
Hello.
Hello, panel. With all the attention going to Russian health care, who is minding what's going on in the Pruitt, DeVos, and others? And Gina says, word on the street is Bush and Obama are working behind the scenes to save our democracy from Russia. Have you heard anything about that? Love, Rosemary and Teresa.
Yay.
Yay. And hi, panel. There was an interview this morning with a former attorney, I've forgotten his name, who said any Republican who votes no on the repeal will be primaried. That's true. He said they promised for 7 years to repeal and they shouldn't flip-flop now. Well, things have changed over 7 years. The constituents changed their minds and now want Obamacare. So shouldn't representatives be allowed to change their minds, too, and do what people want them to do now?
Yeah, that was Cuccinelli from Virginia. I thought that was interesting. I heard that interview and I don't know that he has the politics of this right. He certainly doesn't have the policy right. decimating people's access to health care is never a good idea, but he thinks he has the politics right.
When Susan Collins comes up, right, in Maine?
She's going to win heartily.
Overwhelmingly. Sure.
I want to find some place in Maine to donate to in her honor, some health care clinic.
Anne says, hi, panel. I'm wondering why the media and the Democrats aren't hammering on this. Trump stated during his campaign that he was in favor of single-payer health care. Was it during the campaign or much earlier? I think it was earlier. I'm not exactly sure. Anyway, that's what I got.
That's what you got. All right, so let's move on to other issues, and because we have stuff too, and we'll go to the Trump Voter Commission. This story is interesting. It hasn't even met, and it's already off to a rough start, reads the headline in the Washington Post. A commission set to convene Wednesday, that would be today for those of you keeping score at home, to advise President Trump on election integrity includes the publisher of Alien Invasion 2, a report on undocumented immigrants who mysteriously showed up on the voter rolls in Virginia. Another member is known for scanning obituaries in his West Virginia county to make sure dead people are promptly deleted from voter lists. Another championed some of the strictest voter identification laws in the country during her days in the Indiana legislature. And yet another warned nearly a decade ago of the possibility for voter fraud on a scale never seen before in this country. During his tenure as Ohio's Secretary of State, the Social Security numbers of 1.2 million state voters accidentally posted on the agency's website. As Alan would say, accidentally on purpose.
That was good.
Even before this panel of 12 holds its first official meeting at the White House complex, it has sparked more controversy and more questions about its competency than any other presidential advisory commission in memory.
Well, as the New York Times pointed out today, the competency and power of that commission is not so important as compared to the U.S. Justice Department, which is supporting the commission on, of course, orders from the president and Jeff Sessions. And it actually has clout to force a disclosure of information. And that headline I objected to, it's off to an excellent start, if you think consider what the commission is supposed to do, which is to suppress voters. In Colorado alone, thousands of voters, fearful that their private information will come out because of the commission, have withdrawn from the voter rolls. So it's already having the effect that I think the Republicans and Trump want it to have.
Are you beeping, Rosemary?
I'm sorry, it's my computer.
Okay, that's all right. We were going a little crazy thinking it was us. So
no,
if it's
I'm
you,
sorry,
that's
it
fine.
It's a computer here, and
all
I
right.
can't. I have it on silent. Sorry, I'll try to shut
no,
it
you're,
down.
No, that's fine. I just as long as we didn't mean we were losing you or that we were.
I didn't think you could hear it that far away.
That's funny.
We were worried that that more people were hearing it than we wanted to. All right. Teresa, weigh in.
I think the commission is hard at work on a problem that doesn't exist or is relatively minor.
Yep.
And it's really a smokescreen for what? And for what is the thing that we have to be cautious and concerned about? Because the Republicans in general and the Trump team in particular have been really focused like a laser beam for a long time on voter suppression. And meaning making it harder for the average person to go and vote, which is not a very democratic way to be, but it has worked for them, and it worked for them in the last election. But I think in the meantime, the White House is not focused on the very real problem that our intelligence community has been warning about, which is external Russian interference in our elections. And I was interested to see there's a Politico story that really struck me. Politico has this cybersecurity daily briefing, which I found to be fascinating. And they in this the story in the daily briefing yesterday was that this longtime expert in global cybersecurity at the State Department has been given 2 weeks' notice, and that they have been dismantling in the State Department the cybersecurity office, and that Rex Tillerson thinks that it doesn't really need to exist. Yet cybersecurity, whether it's on our elections or with our, you know, interfering in our business, our infrastructure is a serious threat. So to me, on the one hand, you have the State Department dismantling a very talented organization that is critical to our security. At the same time, you have convening in the White House a group of people who are working on something that's not really a problem.
Amazing. Just amazing. And then you always have to wonder who told who to do what.
Right. Yeah. You know, it isn't just that it's not a problem. It's that that commission has an agenda, which is not about routing out fraud, which basically doesn't exist. There's very little of it, and it's almost always caught and prosecuted. There is a mission to cut out certain people, most of them in the minority communities who tend to vote Democratic.
Yes.
And the way they're doing this, you can see it in their methods. They're gonna pinpoint people who are appear to be registered to vote in different places. And usually it's people who have the same common names, like Smith or Jones or Washington. And guess what groups of people are most likely for that to be affected by that? Minorities. It's hideous. And even as I'm saying this, and I believe it, I can just hear the Trumpansies saying things like, well, what's so bad about having an ID? Why can't you just have a driver's license or something? Why is that so onerous on minority communities? And again, we don't have a good answer for it. I'm working on that. I really think that this is the call to action of the future, is to stop this commission, and it's really a nefarious work.
Right, and I misstated when I said it's not a problem. You're absolutely right, Rosemary, but the problem that they are working on is not the real problem. The real problem is voter suppression.
Right.
And the problem that they are working on is a different, you know, this fabricated issue.
Yes.
Of people, of irregularities in our voting, which research after research after research shows it is not a big problem. And to your point, I thought it was interesting in this story, they said that there is no representation from anyone who lives west of Kansas. So I thought, found that to be a funny fact. But also, there's only, you know, one Latino, one African American. I mean, but the bottom line is the courts have upheld this contention that there is a problem in our country with Republicans and voter suppression. And now you have a group of people in the White House who want to work to exacerbate that problem.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So let's go. We have a couple of letters and we'll move on to another topic when we're done that.
Okay. Martin says, on the roundtable this morning, just before the 10 a.m. break, did Ms. Bourgeois actually make reference to people who support our president as Trumpansies? Did you call
No, that was Rosemary.
That was Rosemary.
And you also used another term, which if I used, I would have been...
I just emailed you about that.
I've said many offensive things. I think that John McCain is unqualified. I talked about a fat man, and I called him Trumpansies.
All of which are pretty funny. But then there was also the matter of the Putin pansies, I believe is the word you used.
Well, that was the same one, right?
What? Oh, it was it?
Yeah, that wasn't me. That was classic Rosemary. As much as I love you, Rosemary, I will disagree with you on John McCain. I do think that he...
I think he floats in and out, to tell you the truth.
Right.
I do.
But I do.
His,
I think
his performance during the Comey investigation was scary. He seemed very out of it.
But based on what we now know about his craniotomy, whatever you call it, craniotomy, there was probably reason for that, Rosemary, don't you think? Like a brain tumor or something like that.
I think a clot above your eye that requires immediate surgery by the Mayo Clinic is major.
I don't think that's a little thing.
We have to wish the best for him. And I also was reminded that it was 2 years ago yesterday that Donald Trump denigrated him and said, you know, I don't like people who are captured. So he not only denigrated him, but every other POW.
Which reminds me, how come these people who have really been seriously denigrated, that attack on McCain was awful, just
despicable.
Awful. And, you know, especially from a guy like Trump who claims that he honors veterans and everything else and say, well, if you were caught, you're no good. You know, that's incredible stuff. It goes directly to everything that McCain stood for. And then everybody else, like Crazy Ted and this one and Little Marco, they vote with him. What, they don't remember any of this? Anyway.
Yeah.
Hi, panel. As soon as Trump was elected, the U.S. government should have taken over the Russian loans. His sons had already said that Russian banks had financed several of their projects. It's ridiculous that the Russians have a U.S. president in financial debt to them. I could not agree more. And that's from Elizabeth. Okay. Good morning, all. Fox News current headline is about Hillary, not health care failure by GOP. Sad. From Mike.
Exactly. And so you wonder why people have the views they do. But if they watch Fox News, if they listen, you know, to the right-wing radio, if they read Breitbart, then you get a whole different view of what's going on.
Well, it's not only that. It's you go where you're comfortable. So I think that the audience that Fox has and that Breitbart have are, you know, they go there. They don't come here. Don't you see? Okay.
Right.
Hi, panel. Sorry I'm late, says Jerry from Gilderland.
Never late.
Did you mention that the three senators who opposed the latest move by Mitch to eliminate Obamacare all came out against the vote? You know, the gender who was excluded from the beginning?
Yeah, all three women. All three women,
yeah.
And Rush Limbaugh apparently yesterday attacked them vigorously on his show, call him leftist.
Yeah, well, of course. And Russell says, stop asking why Trump does this and that. Trump is being Trump. He simply doesn't think beyond himself. He may be the most self-centered person we've ever seen. Too bad, huh? Russ from Northfield, Massachusetts. And finally, Thomas says...
Can I just say, I think when you stop saying why and stop looking at it is when we are in real danger.
I agree with you, Jim.
I think when you normalize it and just say it's Trump being Trump, that's scary.
Yeah. Especially since he happens to be the president of the United States.
There is that.
And has a little power. Tom says, what if the damaging information that Donald Jr. was seeking was really about his father, not Hillary? Was Hillary just cover? Tom from Catskill.
For Junior, who's going against his father? Oh, I'd love to believe that, but there's not a shred of evidence.
No. I don't think that's what it meant. I think that the import of the letter, Rosemary, is that they're so concerned with what the Russians have on Trump.
Oh, that this might have been
that
the
this
tea
may
tape
have been
or something.
An attempt to figure it all out.
I got it.
And it's also why we think, or some people think, Trump may have gotten up from his seat and walked over to Putin.
Well, I don't know. I think the Times and others have done very interesting timelines where they juxtapose these meetings and other things that happened in the campaign. And I believe it was a night later, where that's when Trump said, you know, stay tuned because in the next 2 or 3 days I'm going to have a speech about Hillary. And, you know, there's no direct connection between that meeting and that reference that they were going to be talking about it. But
you make a good point.
I'm sorry, it was just before. Yeah, so
you make a good point.
So I think all evidence points to it was, and they were handed an envelope. That's the other thing. What was in the envelope that they were handed? That's the key for, you know, and this is really a Mueller question. And, you know, again, I go back to the 80-10-10 rule that focus on 80% of policy and 10% on this corruption stuff.
Yeah.
But I think Mueller, and the thing we're not talking about today, which because there's so much other news, is the budget that the House introduced, the House Republicans, which is devastating. One of the writers earlier talked about the EPA and the Department of Education. You know, this House budget, the Trump budget was really bad.
Right.
But the House budget is devastating for all the things, you know, we care about.
I want to get to John Huntsman being nominated as the U.S. ambassador to Russia. The White House announced this on Tuesday. There had been a delay in formalizing the appointment amid deteriorating relations between the two countries. The White House confirmed in March that it would name Huntsman and U.S. ambassador to China under Barack Obama to the Russia Post, but the White House had delayed formally naming him and sending the nomination to the Senate for confirmation as the U.S. waited for the Kremlin to approve his selection. So now everything seems to be okay.
Yeah, well, everybody...
It's got to be a thankless job. He's got to contend with Trump and Tillerson, who both regard themselves as Russian experts. There's the Russian investigation going on. He really just wants to get back in the game a lot, I think.
Well, he's been in the game. And by the way, Rosemary, he's gotten tremendous marks from all over the place on both sides of the aisle. So I think this may be a little bit of a retreat for Trump, having to find some people who have some real bona fides, as opposed to, questionable appointments that we have seen over and over again.
You may be right, Alan, but even when he has made very good appointments, Mattis, for example, he doesn't listen or pay attention. So really, are we any further ahead?
Good points.
Teresa?
Right. I have to say hello, Joe, to my mother and my son who just turned on the radio. They realized that I've talking to you guys, which is a lot more than I've talked to them in the past week by phone.
Well, that's cool.
Well, that's lovely.
Hi,
and sad
Mom.
At the same time. You know, you we can have them come over and just be a part of so they can finally talk to you.
They're actually pretty interesting. This is how I learned how to do this, fighting yeah. with my family over the dinner table. Yeah.
Well, I think that Rosemary,
we're going to give you the last word. We only have 20 seconds.
Right, that Huntsman has a real tough job here. But I also, there's a real problem that there aren't enough of diplomats around the world that have been nominated. But Callista Gingrich,
right.
the Vatican yesterday, she had her hearing to go to the Vatican. So, yikes.
All right, we are out of time. My thanks to everyone who wrote in. My thanks, of course, to Alan and to Teresa and Rosemary. Very nice to hear from you, and we'll be in touch. We'll talk soon.
Good. I love you guys.
I love Bye-bye. You right back. Thank you very much. We'll be back after this.